People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. I have an interesting guest this week. His name is Bernardo Oosthuizen, and one of the most important things he does is he runs a West Skills Center. But that's not all of the story. Bernardo has quite an interesting history. He is an addict. He went to a 12-step program, and he has learnt a huge amount from that 12-step program. He is also very keen to help other people who may believe they have an addiction but don't quite know what to do or are worried about a stigma of going to a 12-step system. So we're talking about that as well as this West Skills Center. So, Bernardo, welcome. It's good to have you here.
Rodney, thank you very much. I'm a regular listener of FMR.
Well, now you passed the test.
I listen to the show often, and I really appreciate the guests that you've got on this show. And I never thought I would have the opportunity to be here today and to explain to you what it is that I'm trying to do.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It's unique what you're trying to do, because not only have you experienced the 12-step program, which has been, by all accounts, a success for you, but you're running the Skills Center, which I want to talk about. But first of all, you're quite brave in doing all this, and I know sometimes you use pseudonyms and all that, so you call yourself Mr. B, but you've given us permission to call you Bernardo. So I would like you just to tell me your situation. What happened in your life that caused you to get involved with the 12-step program?
So, Rodney, in a nutshell, I started abusing alcohol and at a very, very young age, and I realized that I've got a problem at a very young age, and I started going to treatment facilities in the year 2000, and I went to many of them, and each time I came out, I had the same problem. What now? And then it kept going like that until 2006, where I was dead, and I went to treatment, but I didn't come out because I was too scared of repeating the same cycle. So instead of just going out and going home and, you know, facing the same reality out there, I went to a secondary treatment and a tertiary treatment and an extended tertiary treatment.
Oh, right. Is this like rehab? Are we talking about rehab?
Yes. Okay. Just different types of rehab where you've got different levels of program and whether you work out or whether you stay in the as an inpatient.
Just one thing. When you said you were very young when you discovered you were drinking too much, what sort of age are you talking about?
To be honest, about 11.
Oh, as young as that?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Alcohol as well?
Both alcohol and other substances, yes.
Okay. So it was a combination of alcohol and other substances that caused you to become addicted?
Yes. Look, we can really delve into why I became addicted. So the substance wasn't the problem. There's something inside of me that was the problem. The substance was my medicine for said problem. And then the medicine for said problem became the secondary problem, which was then what brought me to my knees, relatively much older than at the point where I decided that I've got a problem.
Yeah, it's interesting that you realized that and did something about it, although you did say you tried a few times to do something and didn't work because you went out again. So you realized within yourself that you had to do something serious to stop this whole cycle.
Yeah, let's call it a bit of an educational illness, being an addict and alcoholic, because at first you think you can just do it yourself, and then you try and it doesn't work, and you try something different, and then that doesn't work, and then you try something different, and then that doesn't work, and eventually you just get to a point where nothing that I try works, and then I become ready to listen to advice, and I'm ready to, okay, you say I need to do these things, let me try this. And it's at that point where my pain was great enough to generate the willingness that I needed to listen to other people.
And so this rehab you went into, you said you went for a few weeks and it went on to quite a long time.
Yes, so the first stage was 4 weeks, and then there was another stage of, I think, 3 months, and the entire process was about 6 months.
Okay, that you were off the streets, out of the public. You were in a place...
Well,
of your own.
At about 2-3 months, I started you know, working out and going out, and mm-hmm. started slowly reintegrating into society, getting a job, going to events, mingling with, you know, society out there.
Have you had to, as a result of this, very often these 12-step programs require you to have ongoing help through your life, or were you able to go on your own?
So the 12-step program as such, that's the ongoing thing.
Mm-hmm.
The treatment facility itself is not affiliated with any 12-step program. So good treatment facilities facilitates the 12-step program in their program.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the better centers, in my opinion. And then when you leave, then that's when you become, when you stay, a member of a 12-step fellowship. And ideally, that would carry on for the rest of your life.
Okay. So do you go to regular meetings now?
I do.
How many years has it since you've been dry, so to speak?
I've been sober now for...
Sober, that's the word I was looking for.
So I've been sober now for 18 years and 2 months.
18 years?
Yes.
So it's worked for you?
Yes, it has, but touch wood, if I stop working my program, if I stop following the suggestions, if I stop growing my spiritual basis, then I might end up going back.
Okay.
Because we believe it to be a disease. It's something you've got. It's not going away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being allergic to bee stings. You just make sure you don't get stung by a bee.
It's interesting you said that, because the recent very high-profile death of Matthew Perry,
yes,
the Friends star, I remember interviews with him where he looked such a wreck, and he said, this is a disease. People must not think it's just a little weakness of theirs. It is,
in fact,
a disease. And you need to treat it, and you need to treat it like you would any other major disease.
Yes, exactly. So the is treatment for this disease. It just doesn't look like your typical treatment. Big pharma can't bring out a patented pill, and you take a pill for
this.
This
to
is
heal
not how it works.
Yeah.
This works more on a spiritual basis. When I say spiritual, I'm not referring to church or religion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm referring to whatever spirituality looks like to you is what you need to practice. And the 12 steps is a toolkit. It's a set of concepts by which you learn to live your life and manage your relationships and your affairs by.
Okay. Well, there's still more I want to find out from you, Bernardo, and also about the West Skills Center. But let's take a music break. What sort of music do you listen to, and what have you brought along for us to share?
I listen to any and all music, but I decided to bring fine music today.
Good for you.
And the first song that I would like us to listen to is You Don't Forget by Lyrica Rach. I only discovered this song a couple of months ago. And it's a catchy song. It's a South African singer. And it's a happy song, but at the same time, there's a very serious message there for me of, like, you know, life happens and we don't forget what happens. We just learn to live, and we learn to live with it, and we make the best of life.
You don't forget the past, you don't forget at all. You don't forget. Past, you live with it, that's all. You don't forget all those goodbyes, the crazy quest for bluer skies, the crazy chase from place to place, from hand to hand, from face to face. You don't forget the sleazy bars, the smell of wine and cheap cigars, the awful hangovers you've had as daylight dawns so grey and sad. No, there is no way to forget, no, nothing helps you to forget within your memories. You're bound as surely as the world is round. You don't forget the past, you don't forget at all. You don't forget the past, you live with it, that's all. You don't forget the games you played, the words you spoke, the vows you made, each time you swore you'd never part from broken heart to broken heart. You don't forget the one-night stands, the hungry eyes, the hungry hands of nameless strangers, nameless men who promised you you'd meet again. No, there is no way to forget, no, nothing helps you to forget within your memories. You're bound as surely as the world is round. You don't forget the past, you don't forget at all. You don't forget, forget the past, you live with it, that's all. You don't forget the unpaid debts, the endless list of your regrets, the endless reasons for your tears among your heaps of souvenirs. You don't forget the stately bed where you will lie when you are dead, and sometimes all you do is crave the peace and quiet of the grave. No, there is no way to forget, no, nothing helps you to forget that you'll be 6 feet underground as surely as the world is round. You can't escape your fate, you can't escape at all. You can't escape, escape your fate, you live with it, that's all.
That was the voice of Lyrica Rauch, our own Lyrica Rauch, and a song called You Don't Forget. It was the first choice of my guest on this week's edition of People of Note, Bernardo Oosthuizen. And we're talking about the tricky subject of rehab, addiction, the 12-step program, and how it has helped Bernardo. Have you found, Bernardo, since you've been sober, you said for 18 years now, do you find an urge to help other people, or do other people ever come to you with a problem and say, listen, I've got a problem, how did you deal with it? I mean, are you able to help people? And this has nothing to do with your West Coast Skills Center yet.
Yes, indeed. That's what recovery has become all about for me, is to help the next guy. Mm-hmm. So with all 12-step fellowships, the primary purpose is to help the next guy to get sober or clean or to stop gambling or to develop better eating habits. So within my role as a recovering member of a 12-step program, I meet a lot of people who just come in. Like I came in one day with no experience and I needed to be shown how these fellowships work and how we recover together. So I'm in a very fortunate position where I can help other men to get into recovery, and I can help them to navigate through the 12 steps and show them how we do this. Mm-hmm. But that's not always enough for me. I've still got that bit of an addictive personality, and if something's good, I want more of it. So that's how I then ended up helping guys on the streets who struggle with alcohol and drug abuse.
And that's how the West Coast Skills Center formed, which we're going to come to, but I still want to follow this up. There's the stigma attached to it, isn't it, for the 12-step thing. And people, I know there's anonymity and all that there in the fellowship, but do you find that a lot of men or women don't want to go into this program because they say, well, I'm not that bad? How do you deal with those sort of the cynics, I should say?
Mm. So firstly, I think the stigma is real, but it's not as big a thing anymore, mm-hmm. as some of us would believe. Yes, you still have some of your more your older generation individuals who would frown upon you needing to go to such a place for such a problem. But in my experience, most addicts and alcoholics who would say, yeah, but you know, I can't go there because what would people think, uses that as an excuse not to go there and not to address their problem.
Mm-hmm. And someone who goes off the street like you did, you realize that you had a problem. It's got you on your knees. You said this, you'd approach the end. When you go to a meeting like that, obviously you have to be very open-minded. What were your first thoughts? Did you think this is something that's going to help me, or this is not going to work, or what were your first thoughts?
So my first thoughts, I went to 12-step meetings a lot for a long time before I actually got sober, and it changed. But my very first meeting I can remember was in the year 2000, and it was in a very affluent neighborhood of Cape Town, and people who are much older than me, and they drive really nice cars, and they look very happy, and they look very content with life. And I'm like, you guys are lying. My problem and your problem is not the same problem. What I failed to see at that point was that they've just been doing it for a while, and their lives got that much better. Mm-hmm. I remember the last time I came into a meeting, sitting there and looking at people and thinking, how can you say you've been sober for 14 years? It's like, it's impossible. One cannot stay sober that long. It's a lie, and I don't believe you. But I was open-minded, I was willing, and I decided also to be honest about how I thought and how I felt. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how I was able to make contact with people in the fellowships, mm-hmm. because I was honest and I would say to them, I think you're lying.
But they weren't, as you discovered.
No, they weren't. And today, I've believed this for a while now, but with having racked up a little bit more clean time myself, mm-hmm. I can now see how people would come in absolutely broken, completely. Life's done with them and they're done with life. And for them to believe that there is a solution and that we found a solution, that's a far reach.
Yeah, that is. I remember a friend of mine who belongs to one of these 12-step programs. I asked him if I could come along just to see one because I was most intrigued, actually. And I remember when I went, we were walking up the street to this place, and there were all these young people outside, and they all were looking, and they were happy and laughing. So I thought it was a pub, and I joked with him, and I said, well, let's not go to the 12-step. Let's go here, rather. And he said, this is the 12-step meeting. And people were happy. They were happy within themselves. This 12-step thing definitely works and gives you the confidence, because it's an uphill battle, isn't it, which you must have found.
Yeah. Look, once I decided I'm going to hand over, I'm giving up, I'm gonna do what you guys are saying, it got better, mm-hmm. a lot better, and fast. But what you're saying there now about how the crowd was rowdy and everything, you'd find this very often when we have the meeting after the meeting, which is normally at a restaurant or a coffee shop, just us chatting and having coffee. We would be the loudest table in that establishment. Yeah. And it's the only table in the establishment where there's no alcohol being served.
It's interesting, isn't it? As I say, it's a great mystery, really. I want to start talking now about the West Coast Skills Center and how you set that up. But before that, I think let's take another piece of music. And this is a famous piece, isn't it? Madonna and Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, from Evita. Is there a special reason you chose this?
It's a very powerful song for me. I remember going and watching this movie, Evita, with a girlfriend many years ago. And I think I was a teenager, so it wasn't kind of like, you know, the right thing to love this type of music. But I've never been able to let go of my absolute obsession with this song, because it is so powerful, and the feeling, the emotion that it stirs up.
Dressed up to the nines, at sixes and sevens with you. I had to let it happen. I had to change. Couldn't stay. Nothing more I can think of to say to you, but all you have to do is look at me to know that every word
That's a famous, almost like an anthem from Andrew Lloyd Webber from his musical Evita, Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. That comes from the film soundtrack starring Madonna, and it was another choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Bernardo Oosthuizen. We're talking about 12-step recovery systems, which trouble a lot of people, which have helped a lot of people, but it certainly helped you, Bernardo. And this now has brought you to form an organization or company called West Coast Skills Center. So I just want to know the background. What caused you to form this, and what do you do? What does it do? Tell me the story.
So, Rodney, this happened very organically. It wasn't that I sat down and made a decision one day and started. Firstly, just after COVID, or still in the last stages of lockdown, a friend of mine contacted me from way, way, way back, teenage years, and said that, you know, he's out and he's done and he's got no place to go and he's basically out on the street. And I invited him to come live on my farm and on the West Coast. And he came and he lived there, and we helped him to, you know, get his life back up. He had to, you know, get therapy and medication and this and that and all these things. And then he was working on the farm. So we helped him to build up his life again to where he was becoming a functioning member of society. And the idea of opening a rehab or a treatment facility has always appealed to me, but it's a very tricky industry to go into. So I've always like decided, no, maybe one day, but not yet.
But there was always a desire to.
There was always a desire, but helping people is difficult, and I knew that. So then a point came when I started building a relationship with a homeless guy on a traffic light in Sea Point, and I was trying to help this guy just to get to meetings and just to sober up. But I realized also that for him just to walk off the street into a meeting and to stay sober wasn't going to happen. So one day came when I said, listen, Gary, I've got a farm. Come, jump in the car, I'll take you to the farm. And he said, yes, yes, please. And he climbed in and I took him to the farm. And that's more than a year ago and he's still sober. He's a carpenter and he's doing really well. He's working a recovery program. He has reestablished relationships with family members who a year ago would just drive past him and not acknowledge his existence. So that was then basically my second case. And I realized that. I'm like, okay, this is good. This feels good. And I can actually do this. I can make a difference. And then the third guy and the fourth guy and the fifth guy, I didn't always have success. But so it just grew from there. And the reality is it is difficult. It is a financial challenge to make these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the concept is there. The concept can work. And I can carry on talking about this.
Well, I'm interested because you said you've had two or three, four successes, including a failure, which I suppose is inevitable, that some things might not work and others do. How formal is, are you putting them through a 12-step program yourself on the farm?
So what we do is there is a 12-step meeting in the town next to us. So they basically just go to meetings there on Monday nights.
Okay.
So I'm not involved in their personal programs, but I'm facilitating the possibility for them to be able to go and to work a program.
And then they work for you on your farm. They do odd jobs and things for you.
Yes. So my big thing is to teach people to become self-sufficient. So they need to work and earn their own keep. But now because my farm is not a operating farm, we don't have cows and sheep and stuff like this. We rent out some cottages and we've got a couple of animals running around. The idea is that they would do carpentry or steel works or agriculture activities,
mm-hmm.
and learn to become humans again, learn to work, learn to live. These are all skills.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I'm looking at is skills to become a human being, skills to be able to look after yourself, and skills to recover and to stay sober.
How old are these people, or do you pick up children, as it were, off the street as well to take them, or is it mostly young adults?
No, personally, I would stay away from people that's too young because I think your success rate is going to be very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to focus on older people. The youngest guy that I've helped was, I think he was probably in his late 20s,
mm-hmm.
But he didn't stick around. He decided that he wasn't ready for it.
Oh, that's interesting. And then if that does happen, do you try and talk him out of it, or rather to stay, or do you just let him go? Because it's a freedom of choice, I presume.
Yes, it's a freedom of choice. Look, I'd really do everything in my power to persuade him not to go.
Mm-hmm.
But then, end of the day, I can't physically restrain you.
No, true.
And that's one of the shortcomings that we've got in this with our financial challenges. That there's only that much we can do. We don't have professional staff. We don't have a nurse. We don't have a psychologist. We don't have medical facilities in place where we can actually offer more advanced services mm-hmm. to these gentlemen. Mm-hmm. And that makes it a little bit more difficult. But no, if a guy's adamant that he's got to go, then he's got to go. Then I'll give him a ride back to Cape Town.
Right. You say we quite often. Is it a group of people that's at your farm? Or is it a partner?
No. Okay, so my wife is involved in the fact that she's my wife. And yes. She's in recovery as well.
Oh, is she? Supports, oh, okay.
She supports what I do. And then my first guy, he's been around there now for, 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. and he's sober, and he's working a program.
And he's still there?
He's still
after
there.
After 4 or 5 years?
And he's instrumental in facilitating this to the next guys. Mm-hmm. So the type of system that I'm trying to create is where the guys who's been there longer helps the guys who's coming in new.
Yes.
And they would only leave once they've built up this necessary skills to be able to go out there to find a job and to look after themselves.
Okay. Well, now I want to find out things like, one always has to talk about money.
Yeah.
Ask you a bit about that. But before that, what is your next piece of music? I see we've got Herb Alpert and his Tijuana Brass here.
Yes. I've got this bad habit of when I walk past a secondhand store and I see old LPs, I just walk in and I browse through them and I purely just buy looking at the album covers, and if I like the cover and the LP looks to be in a good condition, I buy it. And I bought this LP and I started listening to it, and I've never heard anything like this, and I just really enjoy it.
You might, Bernardo, here at Fine Music Radio, you were surprised because you brought your LPs in.
Yes.
Here they are on the desk here. Real old vinyls. And you were surprised to discover that we don't have any turntables here.
Yes, no, I was stumped.
So we get things, as they say, offline of these various platforms. And all these things are available, as you're about to discover. Remember Herb Alpert and his Tijuana Brass, and that's also an LP, as I said here, but we get it offline, A Taste of Honey. Now, my guest, Bernardo Oosthuizen, is telling me about his West Coast Skills Center. Has it been, it sounds like a business has been formed. You formed a business.
I've not yet formed a business. I played around with the idea of starting an NPO and getting funding for this, because that would be the convenient, easy option going forward. But here's the thing. I'm trying to teach these guys to be self-sufficient. One of the biggest problems that develop in your mind when you're on the street is that other people must just give. Other people must just hand out to you. So you stand there with your hands open and you receive, and then you go and do what you want to or need to do. So that's one of the first things that I would like to teach a guy that doesn't work in life. You need to earn your keep. You need to use your hands, not for receiving, but for working. You need to earn your keep. Thank you. And the thing is now, if the facility in which I'm trying to sober these guys up is a facility that basically stands in the world with its hands open and just receiving, then we're starting with the wrong example. So I'm trying to lead by example that we work for what we get, and that also builds self-esteem. It gives you confidence. It makes you feel better when you put your head down at night, when you know that you've worked today and you've earned your plate of food and you've earned your bed and you've earned the roof over your head.
Mm-hmm. But still, Bernardo, you have to feed them. You know, it's going to put you out of pocket a bit.
So that's where ideals and capitalism don't always mix. Yes, indeed. And I've been burning through my own cash for this, and I was naively thinking that I will get to a point where I can get these guys to produce goods that I can sell on a website, online, or in the community where we stay. And that's not really come to fruition for us. Many different reasons. I didn't have sales skills. I didn't have marketing skills. So we've been struggling with that a bit. Because we do have resources. We do have land. We do have thousands of old pallets that comes from a nearby fishing factory. We've got a workshop. We've got all the tools. Between us, we've got enough skills to produce goods. So we got to a point where, okay, now we're running out of money and we're not selling anything. So now I need to run it in a bit. So for the last couple of months, I haven't endeavored to pull any new guys off the streets and into our little initiative. What I've now decided is, okay, let me go and focus on creating sales channels. Let me try and get my website up. I come from just pre-internet where, you know, with all the new ways in which we market, I've had to go back to the drawing board and learn all these new ways when it comes to social media influences and digital marketing and social media. So I'm learning a lot about that. I have employed somebody to help me to get all this going so that I can create a sales channel, so that I can get an income, so that I can now go back to the streets and pull in a few more guys and take them to the farm and start producing more goods again.
But now, what do you do for a living, may I ask? How do you make money, you personally?
So we've got some rental property on the farm, some cottages that we rent out. I'm also in property development. So as my role in the family business has been to try and rezone farmland into residential land and try and get some development going. It has been hard. It's been difficult. It's not been very financially rewarding, but I've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And financially I've survived this far, but I can see that I'm on a bad financial trajectory with spending my money over there instead of where I need to invest financially sound. But we'll get there.
It's a sort of I want to use that famous phrase, a catch-22 situation, because you basically don't want money from an outside source, because then these people are getting money for free, so to speak. You want them to work for their food and for their freedom and all the rest of it. And yet, in a sense, you need money.
F-
for you, at least, for the organization.
Yes, yes. No, that's very correct. So I'm hoping and trusting the process that at some point we are going to be able to get sales so that we can start looking after ourselves.
Yeah. And as you say, it'll make the world a difference to these people that you're taking in, turning them into self-sustaining human beings.
Exactly. If you can create something with your hands that you can then sell and you can see money coming in for it and you can pay for your own keep, I believe that would have great benefit just in personal recovery.
We're going to have another piece of music now. Full Moon and Empty Arms. And I see on the LP cover here, Bernardo, that this is actually based on Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto.
Yes.
Is it a special song for you? Why?
I won't say it's a special song. I love these instrumental songs. And I've just one of my discoveries in an old dingy shop somewhere. And I've just been enjoying listening to it.
That's a Monte Carlo orchestra there playing a piece called Full Moon and Empty Arms, which, incidentally, as you heard there, was based moderately on Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto. Another choice of my guest, Bernardo Ursesen. You spoke, Bernardo, about going past shops and buying these old LPs,
yes,
vinyls. Do you listen to a lot of music at home? Do you put them on and listen?
I do. I spend a lot of time in my, let's call it my workshop / office. And I've got an old LP player, and I listen to mostly LPs. I didn't listen to classical music before my wife bought me this LP player. And then when she bought it for me, I went to Musica to go buy an LP, and it was like $600 for a new one. I'm like, no, thank you. So then I would start looking for old LPs, and I discovered that the people that looks after the LPs the best are the guys that listen to classical music, because these LPs are still in a perfect condition. Mm-hmm. And then I started listening to them, and I discovered FMR. So I started listening to Fine Music Radio, and it just became my music of choice.
Excellent.
And yeah, I've been enjoying it since. Everybody's like, you don't look like the type of guy that listen to to classical music, but...
Do I look like the type of guy that...
Yes, you do.
And what about our friend JP here?
Who's the I'll still give him a couple of years.
Okay. All right, Bernardo, just getting back to this business, your West Coast Skill Center, surely it's dangerous when they're out of your control. You've done the best, you've taken them through a system, almost like a 12-step program, and now you've given them work, they're fed, they're ready to go back onto the street. What happens if they relapse?
Okay, so this is the difficult one. I've got a hard and fast rule. You get one chance. If you relapse, goodbye. You're leaving. You're gone. Mm-hmm. Because if I've got a group of guys, then one guy brings alcohol or drugs and give it to other guys, then it's a bad apple situation. And I can't afford to have anybody breaking the rules. You get one chance. If you do the best with it, if you use the opportunities I give you, then I will bend over backwards to help you going forward. But if you're going to be drinking or drugging on the premises, then that's bye.
But at the moment, you've had a fair success rate, as you said, haven't you, mostly? You've had perhaps one or two little problems, but mostly it's a success story.
Yeah, look, I think I'm at about 40% success rate at the moment, which doesn't sound great, but I know the reality of this, and 40% is a good success rate. Plus, if you look at it like this, if I can save one life, if I can facilitate the saving of one life in the span of a year, then I think that's a great success.
Of course it is. Goodness me. You're incredibly brave, Bernardo, I must say. I've been struck by your commitment and braveness. Having had this problem that you said, where you had to go to rehab anyway, and to have come out of it the other side, you said, 18 years now?
Yes.
And there's never been a relapse?
No. No drinks, no drugs, no heavy medication.
And you are strong and healthy?
I don't think I've ever been this strong in my life physically, because I go to the gym and I can do that because I'm sober. My doctor gives me the thumbs up every year, so I think I'm in a great condition, other than for my back and, you know, the arm and the knee and but those comes with age.
Well, yes, exactly. But I think what's been interesting about this chat, it's an unusual people of note really, is that maybe someone's listening who thinks they'd like to come and talk to you, and would you then listen to them?
Yes.
So you've got a business card here, and it says www.maidenrecovery.co.za.
That's correct.
So people can contact you, find out more about what you're doing, or just maybe wanting to come and ask you to give them some help.
I've been privileged in my life where I don't have to hide who I am, what I do. I don't have an employer who's worried about, you know, the image of his company. I can put it out there that I am who I am and I do what I do, and I'm very willing to help people. I've had family members contacting me to talk about their son or their spouse. I've had the opportunity to go to people's houses, and this is in my capacity as a member of a 12-step program, to go and what we refer to as the 12-step work. Mm-hmm. Where I would try and help people to get into the fellowship, to get sober. I've then had, outside of that, with my everyday goings around hat and not my 12-step hat, the opportunity to approach people and to say, listen, if this is not the life you want, there is a better life. I don't go and evangelize. I don't go and preach. But I think it's important for people to know that they do have the option not to live that life.
Well, there you are. Wise words, Bernardo, from you. And thank you for being, as I said at the beginning, quite honest about all this and your situation. And you ending with Vivaldi.
Yes. This is quite a popular track.
Yes.
And I always enjoy hearing it on FMR. And I wanted to choose six pieces because, you know, six are better than four. So I just decided to bring another one along.
Vivaldi's Four Seasons. This is the famous opening movement of the Spring Concerto, which you will recognize. So, Bernardo Ossesen, thank you very much, and all strength to your arm.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.